Welcome to Life Quest, a program that directs you to subjects and books that will make a difference in your life. A program that will make you think and strengthen your journey of faith in the 21st century. My name is Dwight Lainhoff. Shasta Nelson is the founder of GirlfriendCircles.com. That's a women's friendship matching site in 35 cities across the United States. She's the author of a book, Friendships Don't Just Happen, The Guide to Creating a Meaningful Circle of Girlfriends. And that's what we're going to talk about today. Welcome to Life Quest, Shasta.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be on with you.
Well, in looking at your book and reading all the material about you, and I know you've talked about friendship on a number of national television programs, why did you write this book at this time?
Well, actually, I was teaching it for several years and doing workshops and lectures and different keynote presentations, and I continued to get questions and comments after I was teaching, and that one of the most prevalent comments from women was, why have we never been taught this stuff?
Uh-huh.
And I just kept thinking, you know, it is amazing. We go through our entire lives and we don't ever really take a friendship class, and yet that's the most common relationship we have to develop. And I think we just all hope it happens intuitively, and it felt automatic when we were young, but as adults it doesn't just happen as automatically. You know, we're not spending all day long every day at the same with everyone at the same age in the playground. And so, yeah, I just finally said, I'm going to start putting this in content where it can reach more women.
Would you agree that friendships have a different level of importance to women than it does to men?
That's a great question, one that can probably get me in trouble.
Right.
My theory on this is that I actually think both genders feel the need pretty significantly, and I would guess pretty similarly. I think our culture has made it easier on some levels for women to express the need and to really step into those relationships and enjoy them. And I don't think we've given the same protocol and the same acceptance to men, but I've really, in my conversations, found that I think men crave it as much, and research shows that men do much, like that's one of the most significant factors to the longevity of their life is those friendships and that support group, more than being married and stuff. So I think it shows that their need is definitely there.
Now, just a moment ago, you mentioned that often we assume that these type of acquaintances or friendships, these bonds, develop kind of either naturally, accidentally, automatically, but that's not really the case, is it?
It's not, unfortunately. I think what I've found is why it felt automatic when we were young is that the consistency happened automatically for us. So we slept in the same cabin at summer camp. We played on the same streets in our neighborhoods. We were in the same classroom with other kids who were our exact age. And so the consistency was automatic, if you will. But the friendship, even there, we still had to develop the friendship. We still had to put in the time and create the memories and laugh together and enjoy each other. And I think what makes it just more challenging now is some of us work in environments where we have that consistency, but the vast majority of us, you know, we have very different jobs. We work from home. We do a lot of virtual work. We work in environments that really aren't conducive to friendship and that sort of thing. So it becomes where, I think that's the biggest challenge, is we really don't have that many places where it can feel as automatic as we want it to feel.
I've had a number of women talk to me through the years, and they're very let down or hurt when friendships don't last forever.
Yeah, very. And research shows, again, that and this goes for both men and women, we are replacing about half our friends every 7 years.
Really?
So the best way for me to look at that is if you just kind of thought quickly right now, like, who would I say are my closest friends? Like, if you had to name six or seven really close friends, like the people you would invite to be your bridesmaids or your groomsmen at a wedding type thing, chances are pretty high that of those six or seven people you would list right now, that 7 years ago, two or three of them, half of them, weren't the people you would have picked. You know, you may have known them, but they weren't the people that were really close to you, or you may not have yet met them, and chances are high that 7 years from now, two or three of those people would be different as well. So it really does speak to the normalcy of kind of like a revolving door. Like we are ending relationships, we are drifting apart, and we also have to get very practiced at inviting new relationships in, you know, in order to not just have that number keep dwindling down.
I have four daughters, and I thought it was all sorted out once I had the first one, and then I discovered that parenting was different. But in friendships, we have different friends in different ways, don't we?
Very much so. And I think that's one of the things I'm most proud of with this book is the contribution that I've been able to make with kind of helping articulate the five different types of friends.
Okay.
And kind of helping visually. I think it's been very helpful for primarily women, but for both genders, to visually see that we can love all of our friends, and it has less to do with how much we love people, like how excited we are to meet them and get to know them. It has more to do with being able to actually see what kind of a relationship have we developed together, and mm-hmm. how much consistency have we put in, and how much vulnerability are we growing with. And so to be able to see the different categories allows us to start saying, okay, so when I say I'm lonely or wish I had more friends, now I know which type of friends I'm actually thinking, because I've noticed that a lot of women will talk themselves out of saying that they're lonely because they'll feel it, and they will then say, oh, that's crazy. I mean, I know I could call so-and-so, you know, and she would be there for right. me in a heartbeat. And we start kind of defending, saying, oh, I know so many people. I don't even have time for all the people I'm already in touch with. I don't need more friends.
Hmm.
But really, when you look at the five different types, you can say, oh, okay, so I do know a lot of people, but those are all in these two circles, and what I'm craving is a few women that I can feel really safe and intimate with and feel like I can just call to talk about nothing with and be really close to and very familiar and be more consistent with. Or, you know, so it kind of allows us to start articulating what kind of friendships we are wanting to foster more of in our lives.
Shasta, you just mentioned these different circles of connections that we have. Could you let our listeners know what they are?
Yeah, so they I do them in a continuum from left to right to showcase, they grow in vulnerability and consistency, and they so that it starts on the far left with the most casual of relationships, and I call those contact friends. And so these are the people that if you were to go to church, these are the people you might gravitate to, or if you at work, you might say you know what you did over the weekend or the networking meeting, but really it's seeing each other, but it's not anything of a deep relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It moves to the next category with common friends. And in this category, we get quite a bit deeper within that area of commonality. So this would be the work friend that we feel really close to. This would be the small group at our church that we're sharing with on a weekly basis.
Okay.
This would be the group, the choir, you know, whatever we, those groups where we feel very, very close and connected, but it primarily happens within that context. That's why it stays in the common friends circle. And then it jumps over to the right side of the continuum and goes into a more in-depth relationships, like what I call community friends and committed friends. And committed friends are those two or three people that are kind of the BFFs that are the closest to us.
Right.
And I put in the very middle circle, so I just described the far left and then the far right, and in the very middle I put a category called confirmed friends.
Hmm.
And these are the people that for most of us, it's the people we went to college with, it's the neighbor we used to live next door to, it's somebody that we used to call a really, really good friend of ours, but
okay.
we've moved, and so we don't have the consistency anymore, but we still have the intimacy. We could pick up where we left off, but
yeah.
we don't see them very much. So it plays a very important role, but they're not consistent enough to be on the right side, and they're too intimate to be on the left side, so I put them right there in the middle.
But at the beginning, in fact, you know, the title of your book is that these things just don't happen.
Yeah.
So you have people that say, you know, I'm busy, I'm working, and yet I need this friendship, but I can't seem to find it.
Yeah, and that's where I think this continuum, again, can be helpful to us, because it reminds us that every single person we meet starts on the far left side of our continuum, which is kind of discouraging for many of us, because we
right.
want, like when you say you want a friend, what you're really saying is you want somebody who's got that familiarity and comfortable, and you know that we want the BFF, we want the person who's just already close to us.
Straight away.
And, yeah, exactly. And so we're going around and we have coffee with somebody or we meet somebody and we're kind of being like, oh, I don't feel that close to them, or oh, I don't sense it. And so my big message, looking at all the research and studying the subject for so long, is that our best friends are not just discovered, they're developed, and they all start on the far left side. So it has to start. So when you're looking for a best friend, you have to start at the very beginning of the pipeline, or be looking at, you know, one circle back and saying, how can I pull this person into a more intimate circle with me? And so, like, a good example would be, like, in our common friends. A lot of us have common friends pretty well. So again, that's the circle on the left side that
yeah.
we work with them, or we go to church, or we're in the same mother's play group, or we're in the choir, we're part of this club, and so we can feel really, really close to them. And this is where a lot of people get their feelings hurt, is when that commonality in. So, for instance, if somebody stops going to church, or somebody,
right.
our kids don't go to the same school anymore, or we don't work together anymore,
mm-hmm.
and the other women don't call us, and we say, oh, I thought we were friends, I felt so close to them, and we get, this is like a really big issue. Women say, oh, I guess she wasn't really a friend anyway, and
right.
we get really hurt that that person never contacted us. And my big message to that common circle is that is the only, that's what your friendship was structured on. And so if you remove that structure, then it's no wonder that your relationship is not in existence, because that was the only structure that friendship ever practiced existing in, was at church or at work or in that playgroup. And if that relationship matters enough to you, we have to practice moving that person from a common friend into a community friend on the right side, which means yeah. practicing our friendship in a second structure, creating a new context. So
mm-hmm.
it's not just my church friend that I see at church, but it's also my church friend that our families go camping together.
I see.
It's not just the women in this mother's play group. It's that even if our kids hate each other or go to different schools, we get together and do
yeah.
manicures on Friday afternoon together. So
right.
one thing can change and we still have that friendship. And I think most women aren't practicing moving our friendships into a broader category so that if that structure changes, we don't lose that friendship.
Have you, I know you have seen this, and that is where you have a friend and you just enjoy the friendship and you want all of your other friends to like her too. And then you get them together and not so much.
Yeah, there's an interesting cultural books I've read that speak to the fact that maybe in the 20s and the 30s,
mm-hmm.
In 1920s and 1930s, we all tended to live in a world that was a little bit more like we were all part of the same tribe.
Right.
You know, like if we lived in one town or we all
yeah.
went to the same, like our worlds were all very connected. So
mm-hmm.
we didn't have to be introducing our friends to each other. You know, like they all knew each other and we all kind of belonged to this tribe. And now, boy, yeah, that's what happens often where we now have to be introducing the closest people to each other, and they say there's only a 50% chance that your two closest friends actually even know each other, because our lives were
right.
taking people from so many random places. But yeah, I would love to believe in that scenario that you mentioned, that we could say the fact that I love both these people says there's something there to get to know them, and that they should be able to get along and step into that and appreciate each other's company. But I know that's a little idealistic.
It does seem sometimes as if unexpected situations can drive a friendship to another level. Maybe there's a grief situation happens in
mm-hmm.
one of you, and you are there for them. And all of a sudden, that's a bond that lasts forever.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And I think, you know, that happens frequently where people that we aren't all that close to, but we know, you know, all of a sudden when we have a child, we're interested in getting closer to other mothers. Or when
mm-hmm.
we go through a divorce, suddenly we're just like, oh, I wasn't that close to her, but she's also single, and you know, and all of a sudden that kind of bonds us and stuff. So I think that's very natural, and I'm a big proponent of all of us at different times in our life making sure that we pull the friends toward us that we need to kind of foster this stage of our lives. That happens and is a beautiful thing that we can do with each other.
But in one of your chapters, when you're in a crisis, maybe you're going through a divorce or a grief situation or something like that, and you desperately want to continue reaching out to people, and yet you might not feel you're at your very best or attractive.
Yeah. No, I think in an ideal situation, the scenarios we're just talking about is that you have enough people in your life already that when you go through that trauma or that
mm-hmm.
crisis, you already know people and can just kind of be pulling them closer. But
okay.
for the vast majority of us, I think you're right, is that we don't really have those relationships, or we haven't fostered them or kept up with them until that crisis where we realize that we feel very alone and don't really have that many people at all to be pulling in. And yet now we're having to do friend making,
mm-hmm.
which should be a process of enjoying each other, and positivity and laughter are the best accelerators of relationships.
Yeah.
And now we're in a place where we're falling apart and, yeah, not as happy, and it's harder to have confidence and harder to go out and do it. But I do give some tips there, and I still say that it's better to do it then than not at all, you know. So whatever
right.
it is that provokes us to step into that, we certainly need to do that, just with the awareness that we can't be going and grabbing people by the collar and pulling them into our depression.
Yeah.
Nobody wakes up in the morning saying, you know, I just need a few more people who are just going to depend on me and be needy and be like, just need more from me. You know, I mean, all
yeah.
of us feel like we're we're doing what we can. And so remember that as you go out friend-making, like nobody's looking to be your counselor. You know, they're looking for somebody who will bring joy and laughter to their life. And even in our pain, we're called to be grateful and be a positive person. So,
but I can remember a situation in my own life many years ago where you know, some guy asked me out to play racquetball or something like that. And we enjoyed it. It was fine. And then one day he came to me a lot later and says, I thought we were going to be best friends. I said, well, you know, I don't have a lot of best friends right now, you know, and but I enjoy being with you when I am, you know.
Yeah.
But some people have different expectations of friendship, I guess is what I'm saying.
What did you say to him?
I said just that. I said, you know, hey, I enjoy playing racquetball with you. I enjoy the time we have together. But, you know, a lot of things happening in my life and a lot of people in my life. And right now I'm not ready for a best friend.
Yeah, perfect. And so to me, in my five circles of connectedness, that would be you and he were racquetball friends, which were common friends. So that's what you had in common. And I think one of the mistakes is that we think everybody has to be our best friend or nothing, you know. So, and one of the things I really want to do is recognize the value of friends all along that continuum. So for you, there's huge value in having a racquetball friend because maybe your best friend doesn't play racquetball. You know, I mean, every friendship has a really great gift or whatever. And I think that was really a good example of a relationship that serves you in that circle. And if you're right side, if your close friends are really, you've fostered those friendships and have them full, then it makes complete sense. And I've had to do that too, where you just have to help set expectations. But so hard to do, isn't it? I mean, you don't want the other person. And that's where it would be so wonderful, wouldn't it, if we just all didn't have to take things personally and could just, you know, recognize that not everybody, we can't be best friends with everybody. But, that's a tough situation.
Now, through the social media technology, would you suggest that there is also a false sense of intimacy that sometimes is created?
That's an interesting...
Where I found out when I got on Facebook, and I hardly ever write on there, but people seem to think we were best friends in high school, and I'm sure we weren't. But anyway, it's a different world in that sense.
It is. And I blog a lot. I blog every week on it's called Shasta's Friendship Blog, and I did a piece on Facebook and actually just talked about I get asked by media all the time if social media is hurting our friendships, and it's an interesting thing, and I've really thought about it, and I argue that it's much like a tool.
Okay.
That it's really about how do we use it. I don't think anything's wrong with Facebook, just as there's nothing wrong with a telephone, and just as there's nothing wrong with letter writing or emails or anything. We are all still responsible for how we show up on there, and that's certainly not to say some people don't abuse it. And I do think if a lot of people feel close to people when they're on Facebook but really don't have the real, so let's just say we all have a certain amount of relational energy that we have every week, and let's just say we have 4 hours that we could give to friends. If we're spending four of them on Facebook and we don't have time to go and actually, you know, be face-to-face with anybody, then I would say that's a serious problem. Hopefully we're using Facebook to foster some of the friendships that actually matter to us as well. But, I've read some research that says often it's those of us who are most insecure and most unhappy that tend to be oversharing on Facebook. And it might be to what you're speaking about, how we are trying to create this intimacy that doesn't exist, but by saying something really honest like that, it helps us think we're engaged in that.
Starting in chapter 5, you give some steps here to turn friendly people into friends who really, really matter. And so you give 5 steps of fostering friendships. And one of them, of course, is to be open and taking the initiative. What does that practically mean?
Well, the be open one is pretty interesting. There's some compelling research out there that says what we think bonds us to each other may not be what actually bonds us to each other. For instance, a lot of women especially, I would say here's the difference between men and women, and of course you'll have people call in and say other stories, but I would say in general, women tend to want to find friends who are just like us. So if we have a baby, we want our babies to be the same age. We just want you to match our... When we're single, we want to be with other single women and this sort of thing. We tend to be much more like life stage. We want to be similar. And this research shows that it does not matter that we have these big things in common as much as we have a few small things in common. So that the quantity of a few small things plays out in research as being a bigger predictor of bond than this big thing we think. So if we both find out that we both have a serious dislike of fast food and we both worked at a summer camp when we were in college and we both have a favorite book, those three things will have a stronger ability to predict our bond than if we are both Republican, or we both are the same religion, or we are both mothers or something, which I think is fascinating, because we often are dismissing each other based on this one biggie that we think we have to have. So the be open is, you just don't know when you're inviting people into the far left side of your continuum and getting to know them. You don't know what you're going to need at the far right, and who's going to make that journey all the way there. So be open, you know, to who you might be able to bond with.
And as you mentioned that, I got to thinking about some of my friends who totally disagree with me sometimes on political things or even religious things, and yet we're still friends. I guess part of that is we have learned to be respectful and even humorous as the friendship develops closer. We can, make jokes about the other person's viewpoint, and they don't get offended by it. So there's this kind of a mutual respect that we are going to have a different viewpoint.
Yeah, and you have undoubtedly found other things that have bonded you guys.
Exactly.
Even if it's just mutual respect and stuff, you have found other things you have in common that help that relationship.
In Chapter 10, you talk about five friendship threats. When friendships go away, we sometimes, or any relationship goes away, we make certain assumptions as to what happened, which aren't always accurate.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And I think all of us, when we feel insecure, we tend to blame, or we tend to get defensive, and defensiveness is just another form of attacking.
Okay.
So it's very easy to turn it into other things. But yeah, those five friendship threats that I talk about, we have blame, and we have neglect, and we have judgment, and we have, do you have the list in front of you?
Yeah, I do. Jealousy. Some people want one close friend, and if somebody else likes to have several friends, then it becomes problematic.
Yeah.
And then this, what do you mean by non-reciprocation?
So a lot of people get their feelings hurt, and this goes back to that step, that second step in friendship, too, where you were mentioning initiation.
Yeah.
A lot of us will initiate once for lunch, and then we wait for the other person. We say, well, the ball is in their court.
I see.
And then we get very hurt that, well, I give too much. I'm always the one giving. And here's a fascinating thing. So I've been doing female friendship for like 5 years, and I have one of the number one things I get from women is I'm always the one that gives to all the relationships.
Right.
I get this all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Like 90% of women feel like they are the only ones giving, or they give too much or whatever. And so either one option is we're all giving to the same 10% of women who are other complete leeches, or we're all giving to each other and we aren't noticing it, or we're giving it in different ways. And that's kind of where I lean towards. So I think some of us are initiators. Like we have the skill set to say, hey, I haven't seen so-and-so in a while. Let me reach out and make that happen. Or, oh, she said we wanted to get together, and I haven't heard from her. I'll follow up. And we kind of have that gift.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we want other people to have that exact same gift. And my argument is, hey, we have that gift, so let's give that to the friendship. My friends, some of them have the gift of serving me and giving to me and supporting me at events and listening to me and being loyal to me. I mean, those are things that are huge. And so being 50-50 doesn't mean that I vacuum half the room and my husband vacuums half the room. It means I vacuum and he does something different, you know?
Right.
So I'm a really big fan of saying to women, like, don't just keep track of the things you're doing in your areas that come naturally to you. Do that, give it well, and start looking for how your friends are giving in other ways. But yeah, non-reciprocation, feeling like we're giving too much, is a big threat to friendship.
The book is Friendships Don't Just Happen, The Guide to Creating a Meaningful Circle of Girlfriends. It is written by Shasta Nelson. And Shasta, how can our listeners get a copy of your book? Where will they find it?
You can go into any bookstore and ask them to order it if they don't have it yet. And then it's also on Amazon and Barnes & Noble and Indiegogo. And so anywhere they sell books, hopefully.
Okay. And again, give us, you said you had a blog and some websites. Can you share that?
Thank you. Yes, I would love to. I write a weekly blog. It's Shasta's Friendship Blog, and that's free. So if you go to Shasta's Friendship Blog, you can subscribe to that. And that's just kind of inspiration and teaching. And then I also own a website called girlfriendcircles.com. And in about 35 cities in the U.S., that allows you to join. And we match you up in small groups at local cafes to meet other local women who are also valuing new friendships. So that's girlfriendcircles.com. And yeah, so I'll be traveling and doing my book tour. And so if you go to ShastaNelson.com under the speaking tab, you can see where I'll be doing book signings and speaking. And I would love to meet you.
Thank you very much, Shasta, for being on LifeQuest today.
Oh, thank you so much. It was an honor. Thanks for the ministry you have.
Thanks for listening to LifeQuest today. If you have questions or comments, you may send them to lifequest@lifetalk.net or write to LifeQuest at P.O. Box 33082, Knoxville, Tennessee 37930. I'm Dwight Lainhoff.